All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable United States Coast Guard Court of Criminal Appeals is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Please be seated. The court will come to order. We're here to hear the oral argument for United States versus Kelly. Defense, you may proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge McClellan, members of the court, and may it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Commander Thad Pope, and I represent the appellant ET2 Eric Kelly in this case. Chief Judge, may I please reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal?
Okay.
Thank you. We voted. We voted on both specs, but we don't have 3/4 majority on any individual file. Per RCM 921, that's an acquittal. The members' note shows that they voted. They voted, and they found appellant not guilty of both specs and not guilty with respect to each individual file.
Wait a minute.
File.
How do you know that they voted on both specs and found not guilty?
Well, Your Honor, the note that they passed to the judge through the bailiff says we voted, so we know that they voted.
On both specs, yes, but we don't know how they voted. On the specs.
Under RCM 921, it says that the numbers of votes required to convict, a finding of guilty results only if at least 3/4 of the members present vote for a finding of guilty.
Right, but we don't know that they voted for a finding of not guilty on the specs themselves. The whole question is about the individual files, right?
Well, Your Honor, it says that they voted on both specs and they didn't have a 3/4 majority on any individual files.
Right, but there's two different sets of language here. You have got both specs and then you have individual files. And they don't mention the word voting about individual files. So why should we think that they did vote on them?
Because the members told the court that they didn't have a 3/4 majority on any of those individual files.
But how do we know that they came to that conclusion by voting?
So the
formally?
Military judges just instructed the members on how to conduct their voting procedures and instructed them that in order to reach a vote to convict, they had to have a finding of guilty by 3/4 majority. So
that's right, but there were no instructions along those lines about the individual files, were there?
There was subsequent to that, but not initially.
Yes, subsequently, right.
Can I ask you this? Are you asking us just to recognize that as that equals acquittal and we're entering a finding of not guilty effectively at the appellate level? Or are you faulting the military judge for instructions that he gave at that point? Are you saying he should have instructed them that that constituted an acquittal or some instructional problem?
So the latter, Your Honor. The members found that the appellant was not guilty. They hadn't announced that finding yet, but they did make that finding. And then once the military judge instructed them after that, he basically told them to vote again. That
he didn't say again because he didn't know that they had already voted, right?
Well, he should have known because the members told the court that they voted.
Yeah, they voted on the specs, but they did not vote on the individual files.
But, Your Honor, they reached the 3/4 majority, or they didn't reach the 3/4 majority on any of the individual files.
Right, I know, but we don't know because they never said that was because they had voted formally, right?
Well, no, Your Honor, because it says we voted on both specs.
No, yeah, both specs only.
Can I ask you this? If it's an instructional problem, so you say the standard of review is de novo for this acquittal assignment of error. The government says it's a mixed question of law and fact, and then they cite an abuse of discretion standard. So if this is an instructional problem, shouldn't we be applying an abuse of discretion standard?
It's de novo as far as the question of law is concerned, was to whether or not the members acquitted the appellant. And the findings of fact that the judge reached in his post-trial ruling on the defense's motion for appropriate relief, yes, you would consider those findings of fact under a clearly erroneous standard. And he did, in fact, err in his post-trial ruling when he said that the members had not voted. He said, at this point within the members' deliberative process, the panel president gave no indication that they had reached a verdict or completed their deliberations in voting. You can't square that with the fact that they said, we voted on both specs.
Well, I don't know that that's true. I mean, the very last thing that they said was, we weren't clear on how to come to a consensus on each file, page 3 of 3, apparently referring to the worksheet, or if that's required. So, or if that's required, indicates to me that they're seeking clarification, not that they've come to a final decision. They're actually coming back to the judge and seeking clarification on what they should do.
Yes, Your Honor. They might have needed clarification on what to do with page 3, but as page 3 of the finding worksheet makes clear, if you've reached a verdict of not guilty, you can just leave the page blank. You don't have to do anything on page 3. So there might have been a question.
So then that kind of indicates to me maybe they voted guilty and they're just trying to figure out what they have to do with page 3.
But you have to read the last line in the context of the first two lines. They didn't say we weren't clear on what to do with page 3 first. They said that last. The first two things that they said were we voted. We voted on both specs.
They didn't say how they voted, though.
Well, they said that they didn't reach a three-quarter majority on any of the individual files. So it's erroneous for the military judge to have said that at that point in the deliberative process, they gave no indication that they reached a verdict. They've very clearly given an indication that they reached a verdict. And again, they've reviewed the files. They voted on the files, on each of the individual
files.
Suppose
that the vote that they took was, hey, we believe he's guilty of specification 1, not guilty of specification 2. I don't know, do we even need to go to look at the individual files? That doesn't tell me, yeah, that's a perfectly reasonable explanation of what the note that they sent to the judge was.
While it might be a reasonable interpretation, Your Honor, it's not facts and evidence. It's not in the record, right? The members didn't say that. They said we voted on both specs, but we don't have a three-quarter majority on any individual file.
And so, because you can't tell for sure, they didn't say, it's not a clear factual thing. You needed findings of fact by the military judge, and he made some. So what about them is so clearly erroneous that we shouldn't credit what he concluded about that?
Well, he found that the members at that point had not voted, and we said that they had voted. They said that they had voted. I apologize. And if there is any ambiguity, if there is any need to clarify at that point, the responsibility to do so fell on the military judge, and he didn't do so.
Let me ask this first. Our higher court in United States versus London, and that's, I believe, referenced in your pleadings, but they say the only findings that have legal effect are those formally and correctly announced in open court. And do you dispute the military judge's finding that question was not an announcement of findings?
I don't dispute that it was not an announcement because it under RCM 924, let me take a half step back. What the members did when they provided this note, and I think this will answer your question, Your Honor, is that they informed the military judge that they had reached a finding of not guilty. That finding...
No, they did not say that in so many words. That's your interpretation of what they said.
Yes, Your Honor. That's the defense's position, that they informed the court that they reached a finding of not guilty based on their lack of three-quarter majority on any of the individual files and voting both specs. But once a finding such as this is announced, members can no longer reconsider. But before a finding is announced, they may reconsider if they're properly instructed.
There was no finding announced. They did not actually announce a finding.
That's correct, Your Honor. But what we know is that we have the results of the first vote, and then we have the results of the second vote, which was to convict, and there's no proper reconsideration instruction in between.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's just assume that they were, just hypothetically, we agree with you, they, and obviously we've got some pushback going here, but just say for now we agree with you that this was unambiguous. They come and they say, we voted on each individual. So we voted on the specification and we voted guilty. But then we voted on each individual one and we found not guilty to each one. And let's just take it a step farther than that and say they filled out the findings worksheet and they said not guilty to each one. In Perez, we've got our higher court finding that to be like an inconsistent verdict. And the military judge just said, go back. Do that again. That doesn't make sense. I'm ordering you to reconsider. And just go and do that again. And they come back and say, okay, just guilty. So in that case, it was guilty to a specification, but not guilty to an element of the specification, which was the overt act. And that didn't, the military judge says that doesn't make sense. So it wouldn't make any sense here either, would it, to say guilty to the specification, but not guilty to all of the images. Why wouldn't it, what's the problem with him saying, even if he did say, I understand what you're saying, go back, and you can't do that. So try that again, and they do that, and they come back. What's the problem?
There's no problem if he had properly instructed the members and asked questions, clarifying questions to the members, but he didn't do that.
What questions? I mean, what questions should he have asked them, and keeping in mind the restriction on what questions he can ask?
Sure, and understand that he couldn't have polled the members, Your Honor, but he could have said to the members, your vote resulted in a finding of not guilty. Because your vote resulted in a finding of not guilty, you should leave page 303 blank. He could have asked, have you filled out the findings worksheet? He could have said, do you have questions? It seems like you have a question on completing page 3 of the findings worksheet. He could have asked, it would have been improper for him to say, I'm going to provide you the reconsideration instruction because they didn't ask for it. But he could have asked clarifying questions. And as we briefed in the Reyes-Lesmes case, he had the obligation to clarify anything that he felt was ambiguous.
I'm just going back to one thing you said. So you agree that he should not have given the reconsideration instruction?
Not at that point.
Okay. But he told the members about the process, reconsideration, just that it existed, if they had reached a finding and wanted to reconsider it. Isn't the fact that they did not say, yeah, give us the reconsideration instructions because we did reach a finding and now we need to reconsider it, isn't that a sign that they hadn't reached a finding?
Well, I understand the court's perspective, but there's no evidence to support that in the record. We can't say for sure whether that's accurate or not. But what we know is what they voted, and that they voted on both specs. I won't belabor that point. But there is a silver lining to all this, which is that we know what images support the appellant's conviction. And neither of them were included in the original charged offense. That's a variance, right? And that brings us to the next issue. The appellant was...
So, just, I understand sort of where you're going here, but in what way is it a variance? So, were there specific... I mean, I looked at the specification. There's no listing of files in the specification, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. So, in this case, procedurally, the government did not identify the original 8 images in the specification. But they did note through the Article 32 process that the government considered these 8 images to be part of Specification 1, of the specification. And the government concedes to that point in their answer.
But isn't variance defined by a difference between what is charged and what is tried and convicted? What is charged? So I don't see anywhere in there where it says what is presented in our Article 32. It's what's charged.
Well, your point's well taken, Your Honor. The problem is that the government can't use RCM 603 as both a sword and a shield. Just their failure to amend the charge sheet to reflect their original 8 specified images and subsequent failure to amend it again.
So how would they have amended it? Tell me the amendment that they should have made.
All right, well, under... RCM 603, they could, what amendment could they have made is your question, Your Honor? So they could have withdrawn I guess this is pre-referral, so they could have specified the 8 images, that they had specified through the 32 process and listed those on the chart sheet, but they didn't do that. It's essentially a pre-referral de facto amendment.
Yes, you said that in your reply, and I'm asking you, where does it say that what you do at the 32 can create a de facto amendment of the charge sheet?
Well, the defense isn't arguing that a de facto amendment is okay or acceptable. I just think that that's the best way to characterize what happened here. And the government had the responsibility and obligation under RCM 603 to amend the charge sheet if they wanted to. And pre-referral, that would have been...
But what authority binds the government when they have a broad charge, which can state an offense? Would you agree with that? In other words, on diverse occasions, distributed LSD in March 2025, that, like, you don't have to specify each one necessarily, right? These diverse occasions don't have to specify each instance, do they?
No, Your Honor, but when the government limits the scope of the charge, that's what is at issue here, which is why we cited in our briefs United States versus English, 79 MJ 116. That was the attempted rape, assault 128, and obstruction case. That the government specified the images, the government narrowed the scope of the specification in that case.
They did so right in the specification. So what was in the specification bound them, but what happened here is not in the specification. It was at the 32. I mean, you know, maybe it's a problem that there was, a divergence from what happened at the 32, but in itself, do you have any authority to say that that is something on which we should be granting relief?
Well, so again, I'll point to English in the sense that the government voluntarily, they weren't required to narrow the scope of the specification, but they chose to do so.
Yes, they did so in the specification, but that's not what happened here.
Well, again, Your Honor, so the government's failure to properly amend the charge shouldn't be a reason for them to say, well, the law
again,
doesn't
apply. Why did they need to amend the charge? What says that you have to make sure that the charge, or the specification that is, complies with what took place at the 32?
Well, I guess I would point to the appellant's right to fair notice.
Yes, and there was additional time given when those additional images were provided, and so any problem there has been taken care of by that additional time, has it not? I mean, why not?
Well, because the additional images, remember there were four additional images added to what was actually seven out of the original eight, so we ended up with 11 images on the findings worksheet instead of the original charged eight, and those four images were different from the other original images, not just in the sort of severity of the images. We're talking about child pornography here, not just in terms of the nature of the graphic nature of the images, but also in terms of the evidence. The defense's case on the original eight images was basically resting on the fact that this was evidence that was only found in cache memory. There was no indicia of knowledge or control or manipulation of those files.
I do understand how it's like a problem for the defense when the government steps up and says, we're talking about these eight images, and then later that changes. But I'm trying to be like specific about what violation, you know, what was it a Sixth Amendment notice problem, a Fifth Amendment due process problem? In other words, this variance, this alleged variance, like what norm was violated?
It's the Fifth Amendment right to be only convicted of charges for which you've been offenses for which you've been charged, Your Honor.
But if you're charged broadly with possessing images, and just again, like a hypothetical, you're charged broadly with distributing LSD in March 2025, you know, at a certain, you know, on board the Navy Yard, and it's broad like that, you're charged with that and you're convicted of that. But at the beginning, they're saying, well, there were these two times you did that in Article 32, but then there's actually five or six times, and they present it's all in March. And there's, like, the defense knows in time to prepare for trial. Is that really a variance problem? Or is it just whether the defense, by the time they're defending, they have sufficient notice?
Well, it is a notice problem, but it's also a variance in the sense that, I mean, we're talking about uncharged misconduct here. These are the government's position throughout the trial, really until the eve of trial, was that this was evidence of MRE 404, this evidence was going to be used for MRE 404B purposes and or res gestae purposes. It wasn't until literally when the military judge is corresponding with the parties about changes of the findings worksheet that it becomes clearer to the defense that the government intended to use this for something other than that. And so these are all post... I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, please finish on that. I've got a question.
Thank you. So these addition, the additional four images only came into the specification post-arraignment, post-referral, literally the eve of trial, May 14th, 2023. So that's a major variance in the sense that he was ultimately convicted of something he wasn't charged with.
So my question is this: on the eve of originally what was going to be the trial, the government sort of backs into this notion that actually we've got these other images that we think constitute the offense. The defense counsel astutely raises that. It says this is a notice violation, and for that I want a continuance. And the military judge says, granted. So why isn't that waiver of any further relief that you're asking for?
Well, so it's the defense, he did get additional time to help prepare, but he's already made his objections at that point. He had already been told by the military judge wrongly that you waived this objection during our 404B motion session. And so although I hear what you're saying, Your Honor, in the sense that he had been told of this and given a chance to prepare more, but he had already made his objections known. He had already been overruled, and he preserved the error at that point and had to. What this case shows me more than anything else is that the defense counsel just had to keep marching along with what the military judge and the government wanted to do. He objected, he raised his hand, and then the judge would make a ruling, and then he would just have to deal with that. And so he dealt with that.
Maybe I'm confused, but I thought that when the judge came back and said, oh, you've already waived that objection, was like well after that, like once the continuance had been granted. In other words, when he was asking for a continuance and raising this initially, I don't think the judge was telling him, you've already waived it at that point. Was he? Am I mixed up about that?
Well, so the defense's waivers are with respect to MRE 404B and res gestae. That's the defense's position today, is that when he was waiving objections, he was waiving objections to the government's use of the evidence as MRE 404B. And I think what's important to recognize is that the government and the military judge's understanding of res gestae is part of what caused the issues here. Defense is saying, yes, you can use this evidence as res gestae, which are facts and circumstances surrounding an offense, which are always admissible, whether or not they fall into the category of uncharged misconduct. This is U.S. versus Keith, 17 MJ 1078. I believe that's an ACCA case. We've got this perspective from the defense saying, okay, you can use this evidence, these additional images, for either 404B or as the facts and surrounding circumstances of the charged offense, of the original eight images. Of the charged offense is the key language that you'd have to look at there. So the government's perspective of the charged offense is that, oh, we can use these as new offenses, as an amendment to the charge sheet without having to amend the charge sheet. The military judge never tells the government, hey, this looks like you want an amendment to the charge sheet. You know, you have to amend.
Why would the judge suggest that when nothing that was going on would change the language of the charge sheet?
Well, he would suggest it because the government wanted to use these additional images to convict the appellant. So that's not part of specification one. So
it is part of the specification one. It just says eight images. How are these images not contained within that description?
Because the government conceded as much, Your Honor, because they said that the eight images were the eight images provided to the
Oh yes, preliminary. But they're not conceding that therefore that was a de facto amendment of the charge sheet. Because why would you say that?
Well, I agree, Your Honor. Why would they concede those?
Why would anyone say that that was a de facto amendment of the charge sheet, which you persist in saying? Why are you saying that? I mean, you're making that up. It's there's no basis in law for that.
Well, so under RCM 603, if the government wanted to make a major change, they had after referral, after the preliminary hearing, They can only do that over the objection of the accused. And I'm reading right from RCM 603. So the military judge would have had to have said, defense, the government wants to add these offenses and have the appellant be considered, you know, innocent or guilty on these offenses based on this potential change. Do you object? And so there's not a colloquy in the record. There's never a discussion between the military judge and the appellant or the appellant's counsel as to whether or not he was waiving either the RCM 603 rules or the Article 32 requirement within 603. So one of the things that I also want to point out is that we're talking about a constitutional right. And if you look at Girard, there's a presumption against waiver of constitutional rights. We have a Fifth Amendment right not to be convicted of offenses for which you've not been charged.
That is essentially a notice right. It's a right to notice. And so when they got notice and extra time to make up for the fact they hadn't had notice sooner, why is that not a solution to the constitutional issue?
Well, I think it's more than just notice, Your Honor. I think it's notice and also just the bare constitutional right to not sit in prison for something that you weren't charged with having done.
Well, you were convicted of something that within the four corners of the specification you had notice of. So, you know, why should we expect that the... I'm sorry, I'm taking up your time.
No. If the court has other further questions, I'm happy to answer.
If I may, I do have one other question. May I, Chief Judge?
Please.
I'm curious if at that point the defense counsel was first raising it, if the government said, we'll give you a bill of particulars and we'll tell you exactly a bill of particulars, would that have fixed it at that point in your mind if there was a bill of particulars?
I think a bill of particulars, Your Honor, helps with the notice issue, but it doesn't cure the Fifth Amendment error or issue that he hadn't been charged with the offenses for which he was ultimately found guilty of.
So I mean, if I can, your position is effectively that specification said 8, and effectively it was 8 specific ones, and so anything beyond those 8 was some kind of different offense.
Yes, Your Honor, and remember, the findings worksheet listed 11, not just 8, and the findings worksheet said that the members could have found him guilty of more than 8, so you have to see that on the findings worksheet as well. So there's I think that's important to recognize as you're going through your analysis, that he was charged with 8, the members were told they could convict him of more than 8, and then that he was ultimately convicted of 2 images.
Is that really a problem, though? I mean, we have specifications that say an image, and actually that you present evidence of 3, but all you have to do is find that he had an image. Like, so is it really a problem that it has a number, but it's a greater number being presented, as long as it's at least that number? Isn't that pretty common?
I think that if the members have been allowed to convict on greater than what was in the specification, it shows the military judge's erroneous perspective on the law and what was required to amend the specification.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Chief Judge McClellan, members of the court, and if it please the court, I'm John Nolan, representing the United States. 2 key words here, Your Honors: acquittal, variance. Almost too simple to say out loud, the government's position is a matter of fact, is a matter of law: no acquittal, no variance. Why no acquittal? This is in the context of the member's question that you were just discussing with appellate counsel. 2 reasons. First, as was discussed, no announcement. No announcement means no final finding, means no verdict, means no acquittal. And second, it did not become a virtue by impeaching or undercutting the verdict that was announced. in this case.
Before we get any farther on that, I want to ask you essentially the same question I asked the defense, which is on the standard review. The two of you offer different different views on what that standard review is. The defense says de novo, and you say, I believe you're saying abuse of discretion, but it's like a mixed question, but then you give a standard that when a military judge abuses his discretion. So I think you're saying abuse of discretion. Is that correct? What is your position? And if it's different than the defense, who's right and why?
Your Honor, it is different than the defense, and we our position is that it's a mixed question. We think most of the questions that the court has before it are de novo questions. However, in the post-trial motion, the military judge made certain findings about how that interaction occurred with the members and what the findings worksheet looked like. One of the things that captured our attention was the military judge making a finding of fact about the fact that the findings worksheet had no other markings on it, which is something that, I mean, maybe we could tell from the electronic record, but we think it makes sense in that context to say that the judge's finding there deserves some deference. That's what we were getting to in that standard, sir. But questions of was there an announcement, was there a finding, these sorts of things are de novo questions for the court.
What about the defense is zeroing in on instructions and saying basically the military judge should have given an instruction like look, what you have done is acquitted on the specifications, so you need to go back and redo your findings worksheet accordingly because you what you're saying is you acquitted. Are we reviewing that before we get to the correctness or not correctness? Are we looking at that through a lens that gives the military judge a band of discretion, or are we looking anew what instruction we would have given de novo?
Your Honor, when we tackled this assignment of error, we tackled it outside of all of the instructional aspects. So the appellant made a separate assignment of error about improper instructions. And so we shifted all of that analysis to there. We're happy to talk through it. We think it was waived. But here, we were just looking to, separate and apart from any instructions one way or the other, is there an avenue to an acquittal? We think the answer to that is no. So that's how we approach that, Your Honor. So that's no acquittal, no variance. Your Honor, as already discussed, we have a definitional problem here. A variance is a delta or misalignment or a variance between pleadings and proof. We do not have that here, Your Honor, and it's not even alleged. Therefore,
well,
no.
I think, though, that I certainly have some notice issues, right, in terms of they were told, hey, here's 8 images. These are the images that you're being charged with, right? And so there's a notice issue, and maybe that's cured, okay, ultimately. But in the sense of the actual specification, I recognize that there's only the word 8, but is it implied when you're that specific, right, that there's 8 images and 8 images have been produced in discovery, that those are the 8 images? Is it, as Judge Brubaker said, if there had been a bill of particulars and the bill of particulars had listed 8 images in it, these are the 8 images we intend to prove, isn't effectively that's what happened? These are the 8 images that we intend to prove at trial. Is that incorporated then into the specification?
We don't think it's incorporated into the specification, Your Honor.
Why not?
We do concede outright that defense would have, as I think reasonable people would have, assumed that if the Article 32 officer had 8 images and then charged 8 images, that these were going to be the images. And we concede that point. And further, we concede the point that the other images were only initially going to be brought into evidence as 404B. So limited purpose. And I think as appellant mentioned, that turned into a question of this res gestae approach, which may have added to the to the notice issue. We think the notice issue was cured by trial, and further, we think the notice issue and the issue of which images were in on the findings worksheet was waived. A waiver requires knowing and intelligent waiver of a right that one might have under the law, and we would draw your attention to 14 May, Your Honor, it's 2 days before trial, where this was explained to defense counsel. You may have been under the misapprehension that we weren't going to put these things on the findings worksheet. We are now telling you that explicitly by virtue of the draft worksheet. And the defense counsel had an opportunity, in fact, said, Your Honor, we're going to sleep on this one overnight and get back to you in the morning if we have an objection here. Decided they didn't have an objection the next day. The military judge circled back and said, I want to make sure we got a meeting of the minds here. Are you comfortable with the images that are on the findings worksheet? And defense counsel said, we are comfortable with those images, Your Honor. This was not a one-time thing, Your Honor. This, if we go even into the middle of the trial, they're still finalizing this worksheet. What is it, how exactly is this thing going to be put together? So on 20 May, this is the day before closing, so we're getting towards the end, back to defense counsel. Hey, here's the final, what we think is going to be the final draft of the findings worksheet. Are you good? To the military judge, defense concurs on all. They're not even just standing on no objection. They concur on all. And then even just to take it a step further, the next day they describe on the record the findings worksheet as mutually agreed upon by both parties.
Okay, so just to follow up again on my question a little bit. So as it turns out, right, we have images that were not part of the original eight are the only images that he's found guilty of, right? So in my mind, what happened in the course of the pretrial and trial phases is we effectively have changed the specification to include additional images, right? There was originally eight clearly defined images. That's why the specification said eight, all right? Now we've added multiple additional images. That is a change in what was alleged, all right? And that seems to me to vary, therefore a variance, from what was alleged in the specification. Why is that change or variance not fatal?
Your Honor, I think the way I would answer that is that the spec is the spec. The spec language is incredibly important. We get impressions of what a spec entails, and we make judgments about those things. For example, it may be very clear to everybody in this room that an allegation would be a discredit to the armed forces, but it's got to be in the spec. The language is what matters in a spec. The only asterisk I would add to that is, yes, it is possible that the language of a spec could lead someone down a path that they don't have clear notice of what is being talked about. And
so
that's a question.
Again, I probably did not pose this well enough, but maybe another way of saying it is the specification as originally drawn up said we are going to prove you guilty of possessing child pornography in this way, X. And it turns out that at trial, we actually prove child pornography in a different way. Why? So there's two different things going on here. That is something different, right? Than what going into the trial was. Is there a reason, you know, can you cite to me a case that when I prove a charge, prove a specification, I'm sorry, in a different manner than it was alleged, that I have not varied it, and why is that not a problem?
I'm not 100% I can answer you, sir. Let me just try to tackle it a different way. I think at the moment that the 32 completed, there are probably many ways that the spec could be charged. Three of them that occur to me, images of child pornography on this end, the actual image names on this end and sort of where we are in the middle, eight images. Those choices have consequences, but the consequences arise from the words on the page. Defense has tools, including a bill of particulars, to make sure that they're not being misled down the wrong path. But those choices stand unless that spec is amended. That's just the way the system
I think one, one issue here is that it doesn't say images or diverse images. It says eight images, and I think it loops back to what Judge said earlier. Is there not a path where that eight in the context necessarily implies that, like, you meant these eight? Is it necessary? I know it's not explicitly in there what images. Is it necessarily implied that there are eight particular images you were talking about, the government was talking about?
Yeah, Your Honor, I would concede here at oral argument, and I think we did at the brief as well, that one would get that impression, as I would have, that the eight that we're talking about are the eight that were at the 32. My point to Judge was, what matters at the end of the day is the words on the page. To the extent that a defense counsel or anybody else might think that this meant X, but actually it means X plus Y, the defense counsel has tools for that. And that's what discovery is about, and that's what bills in particular are about. And we would
let's just
go
say
right
hypothetically
back to
the rules. There had been a bill of particulars, right? And in the bill of particulars, those eight images were listed. Would this be a problem that he was convicted of images that were not part of the bill of particulars?
Your Honor, I think it would if the government did not go back and correct that when they switched gears. We're not at all suggesting that the government didn't switch gears. They did, but they also made it known that they were doing so, and they did so almost a full basketball season before this trial. There was time for the defense counsel to become aware of what the government's strategy was. So we think that's an important point as well. We've already hit a couple of the other points on variance, Your Honor, and I can finish up with that. We do think there's a definitional issue. There may be more, Your Honor. I think there's two flavors of variance that I have come across, and one was the Flores case that this court dealt with, which was where the prosecutor sort of invites the fact finder to find somebody guilty of something that the words don't match. We don't really have that here, Your Honor. And the only other one that I'm aware of is exceptions and substitutions. Those cases all have the same sort of words that appellant is using now in terms of being charged with something different than they were convicted of. The difference here is, in those cases, the spec was changed. In our case, it was not. So for that reason, there's no variance here, Your Honor. We also think there's no prejudice. Even if you could identify what the variance might be, we think the defense was unlikely to change. One of the things that appellant mentions in his brief is, look, we're really talking about this heaves.pdf, the sort of worst of the worst of the child pornography that came in on the findings worksheet, and appellant makes a good point about that being sort of a different kettle of fish. But on the other hand, that was going to be before the members in any event. By December of the previous year, the government had made that clear. To the extent that appellant had to deal with the fact that the fact finders might judge their client because of that type of child pornography found on his phone, they were going to have to deal with that anyways. So this was not a new problem that they were going to have to shift to deal with. This was a problem.
Did the difference in the number of images or the type of images, did that change the sentencing landscape? Did that change the potential punishment that appellant was facing?
It did not change the maximum punishment, Your Honor. I know that that goes to the materiality question. Obviously, the offense did not change. A little unclear about the seriousness of the offense. This is the other prong of materiality. We did not talk about this in our brief, Your Honor, but maybe an open question. We think that goes back to how the punitive article is defined. Seriousness of the offense uptick would be something like it was involuntary and now it's voluntary, for example, that sort of thing. Rather than just an implication that, hey, this is new stuff that's worse than it was before. So we think there's an argument to be made as well with respect to materiality. Again,
but an increase in number would be more serious, too. If you went from 8 to 11, that would be a major change, wouldn't it? It's more. You're saying that you possessed more images. So if the government had modified it to read 11 now, would that be a major change?
I don't think it would be, Your Honor. My understanding was that counsel was tracking that possibility. Obviously, it didn't happen in this case, but no, sir. I don't believe it would. It certainly wouldn't change the max punishment.
So could we go back to the issue of whether there was a finding of not guilty or not?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, again, when I look at the note, the members clearly indicated that they voted and that they didn't have a three-quarters majority on any individual files. Now, is that not a fact that we have to deal with? Didn't they indicate in their vote, didn't they indicate in their note that they had a vote and that they did not have sufficient number of members vote guilty on any individual image? Is that not a problem that we have to deal with as a factual matter?
Your Honor, we don't think it is. We think that there are layers of ambiguity with respect to this question, some of which the court has already hit on. We think the first one is the formality of the vote to begin with. It is certainly within the panel's right to not have any number of votes be formal votes. We're obviously speculating one way or the other. We only have those words of that question, but that's just the first layer of ambiguity. And the second, I think the court has already discussed with the appellant, which is, you know, what was the nature of this vote exactly on spec one? We think the best way to think through it, Your Honor, is just to walk through the findings worksheet line by line. Once you do that, I think it does become pretty clear how the members might have gotten confused by this. And what I mean is, contextually, actually, it would be helpful. I would draw your attention to three appellate exhibits, 72, 3, and 4. This was an email exchange, Your Honor, of counsel and the military judge talking about our findings worksheet. What is it going to look like?
Which appellate exhibit did you say?
72, 3, and 4, Your Honor. What's striking about this is that change, the original findings worksheet didn't have any images at all. Everybody agreed that was a bad idea. We got to stay away from ambiguous verdicts. The second draft at the beginning of the trial had those images, but it had them butting up right against where the members' eyes were on the voting options for spec one. Remember, those three options were not guilty on spec one, 8 or more images on spec one, or something in the middle, 1 through 7. And then, again, right after that were all of the images listed, which maybe would have given them a stronger sense of this is all one function. What happened on, and I think it was 20 May, so this is the day before closing, Your Honor, what counsel agreed to was, we got a problem here. We think what's going to happen if we leave the images there is that the president is going to get confused about how the president is reading this out loud, because he's not supposed to read the images. He's just supposed to read the findings. A better idea is to put these images all the way in the back on page 3 of 3. We think what that ended up doing was increasing the chances that the panel got confused by that and then just ended up voting on the spec without reference to voting on the individual images.
So I wanted, we, I want to, are you done with that thought?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I just want to talk to you about that, because I think part of this is a problem created as military judges are trying to avoid ambiguous verdicts pursuant to our CAF's guidance and Walters. And this is what they came up with. And you had an intriguing footnote that questioned where it's not part of the general verdict. There's just this other page that's not announced in open court. Is that really a finding or part of a finding? And there's sort of an existential question there almost that's intriguing. But really what Walters suggests is if you strike diverse from a diverse occasions kind of a specification to then substitute specifics that indicate to an appellate court we did find guilty of these. So not diverse, but this is the one. So if it were eight, it would be not eight, but these are the two. So the instruction would be different. Do you have an opinion on the advisability of this court addressing that procedure and suggesting in an opinion that really this should be part of the findings? That would be very crystal clear. Because otherwise, what is it? If it's not part of the findings, what is this worksheet that they're saying these are the two? Just some kind of special findings which they're not supposed to make?
We did struggle with that same issue, Your Honor, as in terms of what is the actual, is this part of the finding, is it not part of the finding? I don't know that I have a quick answer for that. We certainly have thoughts about how it should be presented. I think a good analogy in terms of presentation is we always know that spec comes first and then the charge. It wouldn't make sense to go charge and then spec. We think that's kind of what happened here with the members. They went first on the spec and then looked at these images and then said, wait, do we have to go back now to re-vote on the spec that we've already hit on page one?
So when we get back to sort of the standard of review, though, I mean, that's your speculation. I could have a different speculation. Do we have an actual finding by the military judge as to what exactly happened? And
yes, sir.
If we do, do we need to defer to that, and then why? So it's a kind of a compound thing there, but are you tracking what I...
I'm tracking, sir. Okay. So I think it's the finding that first comes to mind that caught our attention was that the note is ambiguous. And, you know, that sounds trite, but we think it is due deference because it is a finding of fact. There is some question about how much you can read the note as easily as the judge can. We thought there was some indicia of he's in the room, he's been dealing with these people, he might get sort of a further sense of that piece of it. What the piece I already mentioned about whether there were notes on the findings worksheet, that sort of thing. But it is a mixed question in terms of that, sir.
Well, just circling back, ultimately, what about the procedure of actually working it into not just putting it first? So I understand that. That's sort of one way to approach it. Like page one would be the images. But that's still the specification. There would be sort of a general verdict to that. So instead of doing that, what about if you find not guilty divers, then specify, and here's the list that you can specify which one of those. Do you have any opinion on that?
I wish I could tell you, sir, that I'm an expert on how Walters works. I got a little confused trying to follow that all the way through. The piece that really sort of got me was the idea that the appellate court could save an ambiguous verdict so that it was, at the moment that it was provided, actually a valid verdict, but by virtue of a appellate court narrowing the options, finding such certain ones were not, as a matter of law, had to be thrown out and then say, well, it's not ambiguous anymore. We've thrown out all of the other options, so we know which one it is, and we're good to go. Suggested to me that before the appellate court even touched it, it was a legal verdict, even if it on its face looked ambiguous. So my head started spinning at that point, Your Honor. So I wish I had a better answer for you. But we don't actually believe that the ambiguity of that note is required to answer the question asked in this assignment of error, because we think the operations of the rules of court-martial do that for us. Subject to any further questions, Your Honor?
You did say that if indeed there should have been a reconsideration, the fact that that reconsideration instruction wasn't given wouldn't be fatal. I'm not sure I understood that. Why?
Let's see. So now we're talking about the instructions back to the members, Your Honor?
Right.
Right. So
the basic premise is if you want to do reconsideration, come and ask us and we'll give you those instructions. And right. And if that didn't happen and yet they did a reconsideration, is that a problem?
Generally speaking, Your Honor, to the extent that the judge either offers reconsideration or dives into what were your deliberations up to, I think we start to get into hot water. One of the possibilities that we thought of was if he anticipated that a reconsideration might be required and just started reading those instructions, that could be really problematic because you'd have the members thinking, is he trying to send me a message that he's not happy with where we were, our lack of consensus that we just talked about? Well, maybe we should get to consensus to please the judge. So that could be a real problem. So we think there's things. The other theme, Your Honor, I would say, is we looked at a number of these. I'm trying now to remember what the name is. It's supplemental instructions, sort of not sort of the standard stuff, but here comes a question from the members that you have to sort of answer on the fly. One of the themes that I saw running through the case law was kind of an understanding there that there may be more than one way that a judge could handle it and still be within, fair reading. Basically, like the judge did here. The judge here answered the question asked, reminded them of the instructions to do their job, and then kind of got out of the way and said, go continue with your business, which we think is quite sound here. Subject to your question, sir. That's all I have, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you. Rebuttal.
Your Honors, one of the themes that I keep hearing as I read the record, as I listen to the government's arguments and read their briefs, is this concept of burden shifting. Everything that the government has said and a lot of what the military judge implied was that it was the defense's responsibility to ask for discovery or ask for a bill of particulars or it was the defense that waived this or it didn't object to that or they objected and then something else happened. This is all burden shifting. It's the government's responsibility to own the charge sheet, to own what's on the charge sheet, and if they want to make changes to it, to make changes the correct way. The government could have withdrawn charges at any point prior
to... So, on that, let's just say that there had only been the 8 images shown, right? And the specification says 8, and the members come back with just 2 of them. They accept the word 8, just like they did here. Is there any problem with that?
In your hypothetical, Your Honor, are the 2 images that he's convicted of
part of the eight? Yes.
Part of the original 8, not part.
There are
of
only 8. There are only 8.
There's no problem if they're part of the only 8, and the appellant had noticed that the government had limited the spec to those 8.
So what is the difference here? I think you may get the inference from some of our questions that the it seems more like a notice issue. Did I know that I could be charged with one of these other, or I could be found guilty, I'm sorry, of one of these other images, right? What is the problem? Because we know that it's okay to accept the word eight, right? And you can get to a valid finding. What is the problem here about the fact that those were not part of the original eight that were shown, other than a notice issue?
Well, it's also a procedural requirement, and there's a difference between the defense's actual or perceived waivers of evidentiary rules and procedures. And he did waive his objection under MRE 404B and res gestae for those limited purposes. But there's a difference between those things and the procedural and constitutional requirements. So procedural requirements under 603 and constitutional requirements under the Fifth and Sixth, but particularly the Fifth, as I mentioned earlier, with respect to only being convicted of offenses for which you've been charged. So there's hopefully that answers your question, Your Honor. But
not really, to be honest. I mean, I think that the specification says eight. It doesn't say these eight. It doesn't list a specific number of images.
But the government identified which eight they were, and they weren't the four that were added through the findings worksheet.
But again, the defense was aware of these other images. They were known going into the trial. There was time given a continuance to adjust their argument, right? If instead of saying eight, it just said multiple, would there have been any issue?
I mean, those aren't the facts of the case, Your Honor, but
I understand.
I think if the defense was aware of which multiple ones they could have chosen from, within, you know, the realm of, it's not 16 terabytes of data. I mean, there's a limit here, and I think that's part of the problem, is that the government shouldn't be able to just change their mind on the eve of trial when they decide that their evidence is stronger, the stronger indicia of knowledge or manipulation of the files in the four, as opposed to the eight that were just solely in cash. But the difference is that the government didn't comply with RCM 603. The appellant himself, nor his defense counsel, were specifically asked, do you waive the provisions of RCM 603 for this major change post-referral, post-arraignment? That question was not asked. And there's a presumption against waivers of constitutional rights. And again, talking about the fifth in that context. And so when you look at it through that lens, that the government had an obligation, if it wanted to amend the charge sheet, to do so properly. It failed to do so. The court failed to ask the appellant's counsel, there's no colloquy, do you waive this provision? Do you waive this right? Do you waive your Fifth Amendment right? Do you understand what that means and how that might impact your defense theory? Do you understand what that means in terms of defense preparation, how you might want to discuss questions differently with expert witnesses? There's no such questions. I think it's a, I apologize, I see that I'm out of time, Your Honor.
You can finish.
Thank you. So you can see from Military Judge's Bench book, when you go through the guilty plea instructions, there's a lot of built-in safeguards into these colloquies of does the defense understand you're waiving this, that, and the other. Again, there's nothing like that in the record. Go ahead.
Nothing for me.
All right.
Okay.
The appellant, sorry. May I close real quick, Your Honor?
Okay.
Thank you. The appellant requests that the court set aside the findings and sentence with prejudice. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There being no further business before the court is adjourned.
All rise. The court is now adjourned.